Bang Your Head, Quite Riot, Rudy Sarzo on bass. I listened to that track a bunch of times when it came out, and then one day I was practicing and it was suddenly under my fingers, just like that. I remember that very well. Lots of lines do that to all players if you're listening to stuff. Some lines get jammed into our heads without choice, you know, what people call an earworm. The McDonald's theme when I was a kid. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders don't upset us. How can I remember that? That thing is old. It's jammed into my head. It's not coming out either. Maybe I should say hardwired. Flintstones, meet the Flintstones, right? Everybody has tunes like that, right? Their school fight song or some random song. The human technology is there. It's built in that we remember things that we listen to, and especially melodious things. Maybe the sound of somebody's voice too. Timbres, right? I did an episode months ago about passive and active listening, how important it is, and I think it gets left out that we as teachers and or more experienced musicians, we assume that everybody's listening to stuff that they're going to be playing. And I don't think it's happening like it should. I'm not hearing educators saying that enough, and I'm not hearing it out of my students playing when they're playing things that I've put tracks up for. And, you know, like I've mentioned, the technology is there. This isn't like in 1989 where I had to go and search out a CD or a cassette at a Blockbuster Music or at Hastings Music in the mall or something and hope that they had that or wait for them to order it. I mean, it's right there and it's free. You must listen to music to play said music. Let me repeat. You must listen to music to play said music. It must be hardwired in. No doubt about it. You don't know if it's not hardwired in. You've got to know. You know, it's like some of my combo and JE players are playing charts, but they don't listen to the audio tracks I supply. Are they really playing them? You know, and if these guys aren't, some of you bass players out there that are listening to my podcast, you're not either. That's the basis of my podcast. That's the barometer. It's aimed at the players that I know. You know, I think about, I get my ideas from being in rehearsals with my JE or combo or being in studio with my bass players. And I think the same thing's happening to players all over the world. You know, the guys I don't know like you. You know, I do music for the theater department here at the school I teach at. And we did some incidental music for A Streetcar Named Desire, right? Tennessee Williams. That's not a musical, but we came up with some music and we played some standards, and it really hipped up the performances. If you've not seen it, it's your typical theater performance, you know, a lot of drama, no music, but we added music to the scenes. And I'm watching this young guy playing Stanley Kowalski, you know, the lead in there. And he was doing it, man. And I talked to him after one of the performances, and he told me how he had watched the movie version with Brando. And he said, I don't look like him, but I want to absorb as much of his performance as I can. He wanted to absorb as much of Brando's performance so that he could improve on his own. I, Phil, want to absorb as much Paul Chambers so I can improve on my own baseline construction and solos. You know, I see players learning sonatas, arias, art songs, jazz tunes, but they haven't listened to it. They're just going off a sheet. But you have to remember, and I don't hear that enough around here, the lead sheet or score, a piece of music, it's just a point of reference. That's it. It doesn't say anything. No sounds come out of it. You know, if you're talking about a fake book lead sheet, there's no articulations. No dynamic markings. That's it. You're just getting the notes, and I hear players play off that have never heard a seminal recording, or what I call a recording of reference. And they're playing it, but they're not really playing it. They're just playing all the right notes. If you're learning Handel's Sonata in C minor, that's basic double bass rep. If you're learning Stevie Ray Vaughan's Pride and Joy, or if you're learning Miles Davis's So What, you must listen and absorb the seminal recording to understand what's happening. The recording of origin, you know, that thing I played at the top, you know, Rudy Sarzo's line from Quiet Riot, Mental Health from 1983. I went back and listened to it and pulled off the rest of the line. You know, we were talking about that in my last podcast, lines, that's what we do as musicians and especially as bass players. I got to listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan's Texas Flood to figure out Tommy Shannon's bass playing. I've got to listen to Miles Davis's Kind of Blue to figure out Paul Chambers' bass playing. What is he doing? What is this supposed to sound like? You must go to the source. Something like a surfer or something would say, but I mean it. And some of you guys are saying, I do that already. You're probably not doing it enough. And some of you guys listening probably should be listening more. When I first started playing jazz, and I'd had a lot of experience as a musician, and I was in a big band, and we were playing an older chart that featured trombones on So What. And the line was written out, ba-doo-ba-da-ba-dee-ba-dee, ba-doo-ba-da-ba-da-ba-dee-dum. And get this, the trombone solo, and I had no clue at the time, the trombone solo was Miles' first chorus on the recording, you know, dee doo um boo ba da dee doo da ba doo ba da 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 ba da doo da boo ba da ba dee da. And, you know, I'm fighting my way through this, and the pianist came up to me later, and he said, you should check out the recording. And I thought he meant a recording of the arrangement, and we were talking. He goes, no, he says, you're Miles' recording, you know, of Kind of Blue. And then he said, you know, your parents might have it. My parents didn't have that one. And I got my hands on it through a cassette and got totally turned on. You know, I'm like, wait a second. No, yeah, now I get it. I figured it. I thought, oh, this is what it's supposed to sound like. It made sense to me because I'm listening to what it was supposed to sound like. And in a way that did not make sense to me before, even though I was playing the notes right, there's something wrong there. If we're not listening to something that's already been recorded and we're expected to perform it, I don't care, like I said, an aria, you know, like for a soprano, a tenor, you know, singing an art song, you know, one of those great Donald Graham ones, you're missing the point. And it does double duty. You not only learn how to play those lines that you're working on, you absorb that quality into your playing. Tom Wolfe, great American novelist, he wrote one of my favorite novels, The Bonfire of the Vanities. This novel is so good and appeals to me so much that I read it every couple years during the summer. And I have been doing that since college. And when I was in grad school, I took a class in French culture of the 19th century, and we read Honoré Balzac's Père Goriot, Father Goriot, a novel that takes place mid-19th century Paris. But there was stuff in there that reminded me of Tom Wolfe's book, you know, that takes place in the 1980s in New York. It was the style of writing. It was the way that he peered into people's souls and kind of in a tongue-in-cheek way made fun of them, made fun of their vanities, right? And I mentioned it to the professor, and he was like, duh, Balzac is an influence of Wolfe. That's a known fact. That's common knowledge. And think about it. So Wolfe absorbed Balzac, right? The kid playing the lead in Streetcar Named Desire absorbed Brando. You have to do that too. We have to do that as musicians. We've got to be listening to musicians of quality to understand the music. I don't care what style that you're listening to. You know, having a playlist of stuff, that's what I do. That might work for you too. you know, have a playlist of my classical stuff. I have a playlist of my rock stuff. And I put it on and I play along with it and I listen to it. You know, it's like the melody. Some bass players don't see the importance of learning the melody of a tune. It's important. It will influence your lines. Even if you can't play it, you should be able to sing it. Bass players don't see the importance of learning the lyrics. Okay, think about that. How can you play a song if you don't know what the song is about? You're just pretending to know, you know, and that stuff is obvious. You're not really understanding it, right? More listening. Next time, I'll talk to you. If you have questions or comments, email me at phil@basscase.co. Next time.